Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Later on Newsmakers, we're going to hear about an all-ages, alcohol-free, drug-free concert venue in downtown La Crosse. It's called The Warehouse. We're going to revisit our conversation with some folks from The Warehouse later on in today's program. But first of all, we celebrated Independent Bookstore Day a few months back here on Newsmakers, hearing from two independent booksellers, Eddie Nix from Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, and Shannon Doberstein from Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. And we're revisiting that conversation today on Newsmakers. If you have an idea for a future show, I just want to throw this out there right away. You can always get in touch with us. You can send me an email, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Eddie Nix is the owner of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Eddie, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
Also with us is Shannon Doberstein, owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. Shannon, thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Starting here with Eddie and Shannon, I want to ask you, maybe I'm putting you on the spot a little bit because this is not necessarily about your shop, but Shannon, we'll start with you. What was the first time you ever remember visiting a bookstore? What was that like for you?
The first time I visited a bookstore was actually the one that I currently own when it was with its first owner. I was 8. It was right down the street from where my grandmother worked, and they had air conditioning. So I would go down there and just get lost in the books and appreciate the air conditioning.
So the Paperbacks and Pieces had air conditioning, and your grandparents' place did not.
Well, her place of business did not. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Eddie, what about you? What was your first bookstore experience?
I think the one that I remember is out at Walden Books in the Valley View Mall.
Uh-huh.
when I was young. And strangely enough, when all those stores closed, we were able to buy a bunch of the shelving from those stores. I think 3 Walden Books in total. So it's interesting having the shelves of the first store I ever went into.
That's interesting. And book buying just has changed so much over the years, especially with the internet, and not only digital stuff that's available, but all these online booksellers. And everybody assumed that that would be the end of bookstores, and somehow bookstores have, local independent bookstores have found a way to survive, many of them having very, very dedicated clientele. Tell me about those bigger national booksellers. They're not as common as they were. Eddie, you were talking about Walden Books over there in the mall. You've got the big Barnes & Noble store is still out there, but nationally Borders, which was a big bookstore, has closed. And a lot of these places are finding it harder to stay open. And yet people seem really committed to their local independent bookstores. What's that connection between bookstore and customer that keeps independent stores going?
I think that it's supporting your local community. And I think the smaller the community, the more able and willing the people are to do that. I found that in Viroqua, we have just an amazing community of people who support pretty much every business in town, and the businesses themselves support the other businesses. So we do things like music shows and things like that. And the Driftless Cafe, for instance, will offer free meals to those musicians coming through town. Now, they don't have to do that, but they do so that people support our bookstore. And, you know, it comes back to them in the end.
What about you, Shannon? You talked about the store that you currently own having been open for some 50 years.
Yeah, so I'm a third generation owner. I feel going into an independent bookstore is a different experience than walking through Books A Million or Barnes & Noble or any of the other box store books. Many of those employees, while they might love to read, it's a job. They're just there to, you know, move them along. Those of us at the independent bookstores, we curate the genres and what's on the shelves, and we take pride in what we put out there to sell. And when a customer says, I'm really looking for a book, and then you start picking away at the questions, yeah, you can do that online, but you can't have the conversation and build that community with that person to keep, and then they'll bring a friend and they'll say, hey, they recommended this book, or they'll pass it along. And that's a good feeling.
So what made you, what was your affiliation with paperbacks and pieces before you decided to buy it? What made you want to sort of take that on as your own bookstore?
So I've been a customer, like I said, since I was 8 years old, which is a long time ago. And when pandemic hit, that made a lot of people look at themselves and say, am I happy? Am I doing something that I really love? And the store had actually been for sale for about 3 years at that point. So we had a very heart-to-heart question, you know, conversation at home about it. And then we took it to the previous owner, and I mentored with her for quite some time, learning. And, you know, she actually still owns the building I'm in, so she's still invested, and she's still my number one customer. So, yeah, it was just looking at our lives when we had to stay home and say, what do I want to do? What do I really want to be?
So does that mark a career change for you? I mean, were you a business owner prior to that?
I was not. I worked for other companies. My background is actually accounting and business management. So the numbers side is there, but learning the books and promoting the books and working and communicating with authors and community members has been amazing. I love it. I've never worked so hard at a job in my life.
Eddie, what about you? Tell me about the beginnings of Driftless Books and Music.
Well, it was back in about 2004, and I had just moved back from California and had a U-Haul full of books that I had sort of acquired over that part of my life, and realized that the best way to sort of deal with my addiction to books would be to try to start a store. So I looked around and found a warehouse full of books out in Connecticut that they were... some folks were transforming into condominiums, and it had been owned by a book dealer who had died 10 years previous, and these books had basically just sat there. So they were about to throw them out, and someone got the idea that maybe someone would come and buy them from them. So they put it out on eBay, and I just happened to look on eBay for the first time in my life that day, and made a call and drove out to Connecticut and spent the next 3 months packing up really only about 30% of the books in this warehouse, but that ended up being two semi-truck full of used books. And so I brought them back, and, you know, from that point on, there was no looking back.
I'm going to pose this question to each of you, but Eddie, since you just talked a little bit about how you got your first sort of influx of material to sell, how do you curate the different books that end up in your bookshop? Is it, I mean, will you take anything that looks like it's still in pretty good shape, or is there some stuff that you're just not interested in, or how do you make those decisions?
Well, that's kind of the critical question. We have a policy, since we have a massive building, we're in a 120-year-old tobacco warehouse that's about 20,000 square feet. So,
oh my.
We have enough space to sort of say, okay, we'll take anything you want to A, donate, B, bring for store credit, and then depending on the books, we'll purchase books too. So that means every day, literally, that we're open, someone's coming in with a bag, a box, a truck full, and it never ends. So we also have bought out, I think, 6 or 7 different bookstores around the country that have closed, including Larry McMurtry's little book village down in Archer City, Texas, that he ran for a long time. Before he passed away, he had something called the Last Book Sale, and it was a big auction of 6 of his different stores down there. And so I bought another truckload, semi-truck full of books from that. And one in Berkeley and one in New York and a bunch of different places. Plus, there's been different collections of either retired ministers and pastors or retired college professors, which is always sort of the best type of books, because the academic books seem to, you know, keep a little bit of value versus the mass produced sort of Random House type fiction stuff.
So Shannon, what about you curating the collection? What's your approach?
So most of the books that come in our doors are trade credit books from customers, And the only thing I really turn away would be college textbooks, because they change every 6 months, every semester it's a different thing. And so I stay away from the textbooks. But we don't turn books, we don't turn any title away based on title or genre. It's not, the previous owner instilled in me that it's not my responsibility to tell you what to read. It's my responsibility to have it all available for you. And then you get to make the choice what you want to, you know, what you want to take home from my shelves.
So to that end, is there anything that that you are making a bigger effort to try to get that doesn't come in the store every day? Or is there a particular thing that you spend time trying to curate, trying to bring in the doors to make sure that you have it for those customers?
It depends on the flow of book sales. I know about 2 months ago, we were hit really hard in the kids section. We were down on board books for littles. We were down on early readers. And I just put a call out on Facebook and I said, hey, bring us your books, earn store credit, and then you can get new books for a reduced cost. And we had 6 boxes come in within 3 days, like big boxes. And it refilled the shelves. It was great. And my customer base online has been really responsive to our needs in the store when I put a call out there that, you know, this section needs love. And then they're cleaning closets, so they bring them in.
Now, I know a lot of people really appreciate independent booksellers for their, you know, a lot of them are known as used bookstores. Not all of them are, but certainly there's a lot of used books. Both of you have talked about people bringing in their previously read materials that you can then sell to other readers. But a lot of stores like yours will have some new inventory as well. So tell me how you strike that balance between being like exclusively a used bookstore versus how much new material to include. Shannon, you want to start with that one?
We keep about 10% of the store as new, whether it's new sidelines or new books, and it's all at the front. So that way there's no confusion when they walk through the store later. A book can be in immaculate condition and still be previously read. A majority of our sales are through the used. You know, the same book will come and go through our system up to 50 times and nobody will bat an eye. They'll just keep taking it out. But then when the new releases come out, it's important to have those available. But it's hard because they come out in hardcover and then they're closer to $30 a piece. So we do offer rentals as well for new releases. So it's easier to stomach not spending $30 on a brand new hardcover that might not hit paperback for 18 months. And then they can just rent it for $5 instead.
So you talked about books and sidelines. What do you mean by sidelines?
So it's important to have sidelines. When you're dabbling in new, it's important to have the sidelines. Those are your bookmarks, journals. We actually sell craft soda in the store as well. I sell book-themed candles, book-themed purses and wallets. Things that are gifty items, because not everybody who walks the door is a book lover. And you might say, hey, let's go to the bookstore, and your friend will groan, but then they'll walk in and see something else that, oh, well, maybe. And then, you know, they'll tell a friend and, you know, networking.
Okay. So those would be the non-book items, but still things that somehow intersect with that area of interest.
Yes.
Okay. Eddie, what about you?
Well, in terms of the new versus used, we're about 95% used. And we only really buy new books when they're local authors. We try to support all the local authors that come in. So if someone comes in with a book that they've published themselves, we'll at least buy a copy or two of it. There's been some recent books that have come out locally that have been, you know, really great sellers in the store. And we do use a site called bookshop.org, which is really an amazing, amazing sort of alternative to the evil Amazon empire. And it allows customers to buy new books online, any book that Ingram, which is the main distributor of new books in the country, anything that they have, you can buy new. It ships directly to you, and we get a really nice, healthy cut of that. So during COVID, for instance, it was a huge thing for us just to keep going when we couldn't have the physical store open. In terms of sidelines, I think Shanna's totally right. We do things like used records, which really have exploded in the last couple of years to the point where we're opening a separate used record store now. And you know, things like old maps or old postcards, ephemera, which could be anything from old advertisements to, you know, ticket stubs, just depending on the customer and what they're looking for.
We're talking to Eddie Nix, who owns Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua, also Shannon Doberstein, owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. And this is Newsmakers, of course, from Wisconsin Public Radio. We always want to hear from you. You can email us anytime throughout the week at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Our conversation will continue in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Makers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studios, and we're talking today with Eddie Nix and Shannon Doberstein. We heard from them a few months ago during Independent Bookstore Day, and we are revisiting those conversations here today. Eddie is the purveyor of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Shannon runs Paperbacks and Pieces, which is a wonderful little bookstore in Winona. Eddie, right before the break, you alluded to supporting local authors, and I know both of you do that as an important part of your work. I want to talk about that aspect of running the shop. How do you find the authors in the area in order to know which works to promote or which ones to feature in your store, which ones to maybe host an event, that kind of thing? Eddie, how does that work at Driftless Books and Music?
Well, they find us, basically. You know, since there's not a lot of independent bookstores around, anybody who publishes a book will sort of immediately come down to the shop and say, hey, will you buy a couple? But we do also seek out, you know, sort of the more important local authors, someone like David Rhodes or Michael Perry or, you know, Ben Logan, Sigrid Olson, some of these classic Wisconsin authors that people really want. You know, we'll actually go out and order those books, new or used, depending on if the author's alive or dead or it's still in print or not. And those are the books that we have a hard time keeping in stock, like Sand County Almanac, you know, or the book Driftless by David Rhodes, you know, incredible good sellers, but, you know, hard to come across because they're so good, people want to keep them.
What about you, Shannon? Talk to me about your philosophy as far as who to invite in the store and how many events to offer and that kind of thing.
I'm with Eddie on this. They find us. We had 1 week previously where I had three authors within 2 days come in with their books and trying to have an event and bring them in the house. Our policy is we don't do consignment on the books because we can't guarantee that they're going to move around. We do ask that the author have an event and promote it themselves, tell people to come in, you know, publish it in the local paper online and let them know. And then from there, we make the decision, do we stock the book? Do we not stock the book based on popularity of the event? But we do two author events a month because that way it's not overload on customers feeling like they need to be at the bookstore every weekend. I mean, I want them at the bookstore every weekend.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't want them to feel like the pressure, like, oh, I don't want to miss out on this one. So we limit it to two. I promote them online. I promote them in store. I usually keep a nice little stand right next to me, and I talk about them. I also try to read them. If I have a local author coming in, I try and read their books so that way I can talk about it with people, because then I can say, you know, I didn't like murder mysteries for a long time, but then I read this one, and it was fantastic. So that's my approach to it.
So let's talk about upcoming events. What's on your calendar? I know you've got something going on for Indie Bookstore Day.
Oh my gosh, Independent Bookstore Day is going to be huge at Paperbacks and Pieces. So we have five local authors coming in on this Saturday. So we have Jenny Barsh. She's local in Winona. We also have Heather Edwards coming in with her children's book. Sean Patrick Boyd is coming in. He wrote, it's a graphic novel based in the 80s about Winona. So he's actually flying in from Colorado. We have Bud Hoekstra coming in and N. Daniel as well with two memoirs that they wrote. That's going to be huge. And then the weekend after that, we have David Marshall coming in with a theology book. So we're trying to keep a broad scope of what we offer in store as well for local authors.
So a graphic novel about 80s Winona and theology the next weekend.
Yes.
Interesting mix. There we go. Because you never know what you can find at an independent bookstore, right?
Right, absolutely.
And Eddie, what about you? Upcoming events, including but not limited to independent bookstore week or day?
Well, we do mainly music events. We do author events also, but we're going to have a lot less than pre-COVID. At one point during, I think it was 2016 or something, we had over 100 music events at the bookstore. And, you know, so now we get all these bands that are coming through the area that contact us. And so we've really had to say no to most of them this year. But we are going to have one or two a month. I think we're going to stick to that. Kind of what Shannon was saying, not overloading the community.
Yeah.
And a lot of these music events, we're going to try to get out to other venues in town so people can still sort of get the Viroqua charm and come and experience the community. So let's see. Well, there's one tomorrow, but that will be after this is broadcast. That's about it. We are scheduling some local authors that are going to be coming in this summer. But that's pretty much mostly the music. We're also opening a second bookstore and expanding the record store in downtown Viroqua, and that's going to happen on June 1st. So there'll be a brand new bookstore, not selling all new books, but mainly focusing on Wisconsin history, metaphysics, political science, and homesteading. So that'll be one way for us to kind of clear some of the stuff that's been, you know, clogging up the store, and also allow those people who want to, you know, explore those type of areas to have a separate place.
So if people are looking for information on who those musical acts might be coming up, or want to know about that second store when it opens, or the record store as you expand that operation, tell me about where the best place to find information about Driftless is.
Well, we have a website called driftlessbooks.com. And we're sort of updating that this month, so there may be some downtime. But also our Facebook page is pretty much the most up-to-date information.
And Shannon, what about you? Where are people able to find the best information about paperbacks and pieces?
I have a up-and-running website, paperbacksandpieces.com. I update that weekly. I'm also on Facebook under Paperbacks and Pieces and on Instagram as well.
So I'm wondering... just in terms of the customers who are looking for that individual touch, Shannon, you were talking about it being such a different experience coming into a store versus going to an online retailer or downloading something digitally onto your reader or tablet or whatever. But how many people expect, you know, come through your door and expect you to literally have read every book on your shelf?
Oh, lots of them. Oh my gosh. I had a 13-year-old call me out one day. She brought up three different books and I hadn't read any of them. And she goes, "Well, have you read any books in this store?" I said, yes, I've read lots of books, just not those three.
So talk about how you work with people to help meet their needs as readers when you haven't, and how in the world could you read everything in your inventory?
I ask a lot of questions. You know, I try and narrow down what they enjoy, what they've read in the past. I go off of what other people are reading in that genre. I try and stay away from any online searches if I can, because then because they can do that too. So if I know a customer really enjoys murder mystery, well, but do they like the judicial? Do they like them cozy? And then we just go from there and try something new. And I, most times it's a success that they're thrilled. They walked out with something, with a new author that they get to try.
Eddie, do your customers come in kind of knowing what they want and just point me to the right section, or are they quizzing you about what they might like to try on?
You know, a little bit of both. Since we're kind of a unique store in that we're so big, we have a lot of people coming from the big cities, Minneapolis, Chicago, Madison. And so they're, they're sort of coming for a bit of bookstore tourism. They're looking forward to it. They maybe spend the weekend there in Viroqua, you know, participate in some of the other things happening like the cafes and such. But most people are pretty self-directed, I've found. But, you know, when you do engage them, and we try to engage every customer who comes in, it's just amazing, you know, basically, or whether it's getting their backstory, you know, how'd you hear about us, or what kind of things do you like to read? You know, it really opens up an amazing sort of repartee back and forth between the customer and the bookseller, which I think is the main reason that bookstores will always be around, because people don't get that on the internet. And, you know, that's impersonal. And you can't find a book that you don't know exists on the internet. It's a lot harder to, rather than, you know, going to a section and seeing all these books, suddenly they're right there in front of you. So there's a lot to be said for the tactile in-house browsing versus the internet.
Tell me about another thing that comes up when people talk about books is collectibles. Do either of your stores get into that, those like collectible type books, or is that something that is just a different area altogether?
We have a small case at Paperbacks and Pieces that's glass case, which means that they're going for over cover price online. And I scan them and check them about once a month just to see how they're moving. And customers know that that's what's in the case. They know that they can't use trade credit on them. And they know that, you know, the prices do fluctuate based on consumer demand. But otherwise, when books come in and they're old and they might be worth something, that's a lot of time and effort to be looking into them and figuring it out. I have a vintage section and I sell them for $2 a piece. And I've had customers come in and say, you know, this is worth X amount of dollars. I mean, not astronomical, but mm-hmm. more than $2. And I say, oh, good. It's still going to be $2 plus sales tax, please. Because just the hassle of trying to move it along somewhere else it's a lot.
Yeah. What about you, Eddie? Collectible material at all?
I'm definitely going to come to Shannon's store. Yeah, a lot of what we do is I suppose, collectible. We have about 35,000 things that are online. And most of those are, you know, either the first edition type things or the harder to find things. It's just if you have a book that's a, you know, $100 book, the chances of someone walking into the store in Viroqua and buying it are pretty slim. But you start putting it out there on the internet, and you have a really good chance of selling. So, you know, about half of our business is online, even though I've been bashing online bookstores.
I've got a defense for you, Eddie. I think what you've been bashing is the corporate consolidation of the industry, not so much the actual tool of selling things online.
Exactly. Yep.
Back to me putting you on the spot. At the beginning, I asked each of you to talk about your first experience in a bookstore. But now I'm interested to know, do you remember the first book you ever bought?
Well, I think it was one of those choose your own adventures, which I was really into as a kid. And strangely enough, those have super crazy value now. Sort of that nostalgia thing with the 80s kids growing up and mm-hmm. wanting to relive their childhood. But and it's interesting to see that has become its own little genre, where even there's adult books that are sort of in the choose your own adventure category, which is interesting to see.
Yeah, the La Crosse Public Library could not keep enough of those in stock right around 1985 for me. I mean, it was just endless. What about you, Shannon? What's the first book you remember buying?
I remember it was a chapter book. It was a Barbie holiday chapter book. And actually the store's not around anymore either. It's sad. But I think I still have the book in a tote. I'm a book hoarder. Yeah.
If you're a book hoarder, you're in the wrong business. You're going to want to keep everything.
No, I've been doing really well with like reading them, loving them, and then letting somebody else love them.
That's perfect. Well, I certainly want to thank you both very much for joining us. Eddie Nix is the owner of Driftless Books and Music in Viroqua. Eddie, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers.
Thank you very much, Ezra.
And Shannon Doberstein is the owner of Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona. Shannon, thanks a lot for your time today.
Yeah, Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
And unable to join us today, but I want to throw out a shout out for her wonderful store is Beth Hartung, who owns Pearl Street Books in La Crosse. If you're not sure where it is, it's on Pearl Street downtown. It's in the old Aaron's Shoes building. And the thing looks like it was built to be a bookstore. So go check them out for sure. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks, of course, to Eddie Nix and Shannon Doberstein. Shannon from Paperbacks and Pieces in Winona, Minnesota. We appreciate her being on the program today. An update from Eddie Nix. They've got another venue available. They've had the bookstore there in Viroqua, in that beautiful old building for a long time. And they've got so many books in there, they spun it off to another shop as well. There's a shop now in downtown Viroqua called Metaphysical Graffiti, that is. And that's there in Viroqua. And Eddie runs that store as well. So when you're headed to Viroqua to Driftless Books and Music, don't forget about Metaphysical Graffiti, also there in downtown Viroqua. Coming up in just a moment on Newsmakers, we're revisiting a conversation that we had with an all-ages, alcohol- and drug-free concert venue in downtown La Crosse, in one of those beautiful old historic buildings downtown. It's called The Warehouse, and we're talking to them next right here on Newsmakers. And remember, if you would like to hear this conversation or any of our previous shows, you can find them all at our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio on the campus of UW-La Crosse. And today we're turning our attention now to a conversation we had a little while ago. We were talking about organizations that help youth, that serve youth, that look out for their well-being in an environment when they could be making negative choices, helping them to make more positive choices. And one venue that offers that in downtown La Crosse is a music venue, which is really attractive to the young people, of course. But unlike a lot of the music venues downtown, they serve no alcohol. And there are no drugs on the premises, anything like that. And they've been doing it for decades down there in downtown La Crosse. And it's a place called The Warehouse. It's an all-ages concert venue in downtown La Crosse. And we talked to them, probably 2 or 3 months ago here on Newsmakers. Steve Harm is the founder and the manager of The Warehouse. And he's the, what did you say, Steve? Non-voting executive director of the Warehouse Alliance, which is the nonprofit board that oversees the Warehouse. And a board member of that group is with us here as well. And it's Ben Cook, who's also a member of the Sweat Boys band, which I'm very pleased to have butchered the name of. Ben and Steve, welcome to Newsmakers.
Happy to be here.
How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you very much. So let's get right into the history of the Warehouse, Steve. This thing has been around at least since I was a kid. 30 years now? 30 plus years even?
We're on our 31st year right now.
Tell me how you got the idea to get it started.
I'd been in a band that toured up until about 89. And when we stopped doing that, I got a job with a sound company and traveled around doing that. And when I had time off, I would hang out at some friend's place, and it was a tanning salon in the basement of this building. Some buddies had a salon down there. We're on the corner of 4th and Pearl downtown in the historic district, old historic building. At that point, the building was in terrible shape, and there was nothing on the first floor, second floor, or third floor, but the guys had keys to it, and one day I took their keys and came upstairs and looked around, and forgetting the 49 stairs I just walked up, I looked at the big room on the top and went, wow, we could put on shows here. But what we ended up doing was we opened a place that was open from 10 p.m. until 4 a.m., not for kids, it was for 18 up. And we played all kinds of European import music that nobody else was playing. It was cool, but you should never have a venue open that late in a town that is built on binge drinking. Because at 2:30, when normal people go home, the people that don't go home are the ones that are too drunk to know that they should go home. So that didn't last very long.
When did you sort of mentally make the switch and get the idea that you were going to create like more of a concert space and go sort of the all ages route?
The five of us closed it after about 6 months and talked to the landlords, had an idea that we could probably open a place for teenagers that would have dance music. And so it was about 6 months after that that we got it going. We had been kind of tricked by the landlords. They said, sure, you can do that. We'll rent it to you cheap. All you have to do is bring it up to code. We didn't know what that meant. So we did end up getting it going up to code. My buddy's father was an architect, and so he helped a lot with that. And we had just teen dance nights for the first probably year, and that was on weekends and did real well because kids of all types need places to go, you know, where they can be themselves. And so we took all the money that we made every weekend and put it into getting the building up to code, and then it was going to be, eventually the landlords decided to sell it because we got it up to a nice enough condition where they could sell it. Long story short, a bunch of kids wrote a letter to a local paper saying that we were really trying to get financing, and a local bank came through for us. And then the partner that I was in it with bailed, so it was just me having to sign the paperwork, and here I was with the building downtown with not really any idea what to do with it. It was vacant. I kept doing the teen dance nights, but I was bothered by bands every week coming in saying, hey, we'd like to play here. And so eventually we did after probably about a year and a half then, I guess that was. And that happened to be at the perfect time when grunge bands were getting big out in Seattle. A lot of them had to drive to New York to showcase for record labels, and that routes them right through La Crosse. And if they wanted to play one stop on the way to New York, halfway there, just to keep their chops before they got to New York, they'd want to do it somewhere in the Midwest. And La Crosse was easy because it wasn't the pressure of Chicago. So we ended up with all kinds of great bands coming through that just eventually put us on the map and started getting bands to route through on a very, very regular basis.
So the kids here in town got a chance to see some good acts, and some of those acts that have played at the Warehouse have gone on to fame and fortune, or at least fame anyway.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, 31 years, you see a lot of bands, and we've had bands, we see them on the way up, we see them on the way down, and we see some only once, as they do tend to get way up to the top and stay there, like Fall Out Boy, My Chemical Romance, The Descendants played here, Everclear.
That's Steve Harm from the Warehouse in downtown La Crosse. Ben Cook is with us as well, who's a board member for the Warehouse Alliance. Ben, you are not just a board member, but you were a Warehouse kid way back when. Tell me how you first got introduced to the place.
At the time, some kids who are now in their late 40s with children who are in college, I went to a church youth group thing for a bit, like 92-ish. 92, 93. And one of the dudes who, I think he was like 18, 19, played bass in this band. And him and his girlfriend invited me to come to the show. And that was it, man. I was all in. I was sold. I was a weird kid. Shout out to other weird kids. The bottom line is that it has always been a place where people of any age can show up and be in an environment where people care about the same things that they do. And that was it. That was the big selling point. It was like, you know, I was, as a kid, I was into just kind of just weird stuff that maybe like other kids weren't necessarily into. And then here's this place where there are all these other people who have similar interests. I was always a music guy, but not everybody gets the interest at home or at school or other places where they spend, you know, a lot of time in their lives. And I'm rambling a little bit here. But sorry.
Well,
about
I think one of the points that Ben was trying to make is that the whole essence of the Warehouse has always been social misfits can come here, and eventually they will find somebody just like them.
What was it like for you, Ben, to know that there was a place where you could sort of let yourself be yourself and kind of go after some of those, as you said, some of those weird interests or some of those musical interests or whatever that other people might not get, but in an environment that was safe and that you knew you weren't going to do anything that might really get you into any real trouble.
Junior high into high school, even if you are one of the cool kids, is sucks. It's hard. It's everything feels huge and permanent and not great. And if you are a square peg that does not fit in that round hole, like it's rough.
One of the unique characteristics of your outfit, as opposed to a lot of the other places that are downtown, is that there's this great music going on, tons of people coming and going, but no alcohol. Well, there's lots of drinks, but no alcohol. So tell me, Steve, how is that important to your design of the kind of space that you're trying to create?
Very much so. La Crosse has a rich history of brewing and drinking, and yeah, that's understandable. We're right down here in the middle of it, downtown. You know, it's a bar every other building. In a town like that, without an all-ages venue, it just seems like a terrible thing that kids would have nowhere to go.
It must be over 30 years worth of kids having a safe space to go, you know, let their hair down, so to speak, on the weekends and even some weeknights, without the constant pressure of, are you going to drink or are you not going to drink? Are you going to do drugs? Are you not going to do drugs? Because that kind of stuff just isn't there.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, too, to watch the kids who are regulars because, you know, not that we ever have any problems, but kids that come here all the time become our security. If we have a big show and there's kids here from outside the area and anybody is doing anything from even smoking a cigarette somewhere, kids will come get us right away and tell us because they don't want us to lose our license or to have any other issues. The group of kids that are here now, the 100 or so regulars, you know, mixed in with the other kids, they don't seem to have any interest in alcohol, which blows my mind. I was a teenager. Holy smokes. I was some trouble. But these kids are here because they love the music or they want to play music. They want to watch the music. They want to be with their friends, and they don't want to screw it up by drinking.
An organization like yours that is based on gathering and based on live performances and everything, you guys shut down for a good long while. And I know, Steve, that you were committed to not only delaying reopening until it was legally permissible, but actually delaying reopening until after a vaccine was available and after it was available to a wide range of people. Tell me about that thought process. What did you experience when you knew you were going to have to shut the place down? And were you ever thinking of, like, are we ever going to be able to reopen?
You know, when COVID came on, nobody thought it was going to last that long because we'd never dealt with anything like that. At least not our generation had never dealt with anything like that. We had seen it coming because South by Southwest had canceled. And that's a $400 million hit to the city of Austin, which surely wasn't made without a lot of thinking. And in fact, Ben's band was the last band that played before we closed down.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yep, right in the middle of March in 20, was that 2020?
Yeah, 17th of March.
Yep. And, you know, so we thought we'd be closed for a month or 2 months. We'd get some cleaning done. We'd get a few things taken care of that we didn't have time to, and didn't work out that way. And when we saw restaurants opening back up and bars opening back up at the end of May, when the Tavern League had pushed the governor for that, all the health people were saying that's a bad idea. So we kind of sat on it for a while because, you know, restaurants have a lot of people, bars have a lot of people, but what we've got here is primarily kids 13 to maybe 18. So they're younger. So they're probably living with older people, perhaps living with parents and grandparents. It didn't seem to us like you want to take those kids. And they were talking about spacing people 6 feet away at some venues at that point. You can't do that at a rock concert, and especially with kids. You know, they come in, all they want to do is pack up to the front of the stage and be as close to that band, be, you know, without being in it is possible. So so we just kept it closed. We kept watching everything, and it just dragged on and dragged on and dragged on. I think that it was 17 months that we were closed until we felt that we should open back up, and that was July of 2021. It was a long, long wait, and we didn't know if we were going to make it through, but we did have some people that donated some money that helped. We got a little bit from the government. We're not a big operation, so we didn't get the millions that a lot of people did. But it wasn't about that. It was about keeping those kids safe, their parents safe, their grandparents safe, because we're a very generational place, so we're very in tune with the fact that, you know, their families are generations. Because we'll get Tommy, the 17-year-old, this week, and 2 years from now, his 15-year-old brother is coming. And you know how that goes.
So looking forward, I don't know, crystal ball, I guess. What's it like now being back open and looking ahead to the upcoming summer season where there's a lot of kids outdoors and milling about around town trying to find something to do? What's this season looking like for you, Steve?
Well, we do have shows booked out until September right now. Not thick, but they are coming around. Shows get booked oftentimes 6-7 months in advance, so it's been complicated because bands have been deciding whether or not they want to tour. Agents have been deciding whether or not they want to put those bands out there. And then with some of the tours, they get started and somebody gets COVID and the tour gets wiped out. So I think it's still going to be a challenge through the summer, but we're getting some great shows booked, so we're very much looking forward to it. And the great thing here is, you know, we can throw open a couple windows if we need to, so we're not, you know, it's not like you're trapped in some kind of petri dish of COVID.
So where can people find more information about either the Warehouse and upcoming shows or the Warehouse Alliance and how they can support the organization, Steve?
I believe there's information on all of that at our website that we've been working on, whrocks.com. That's whrocks.com. And there's information on how to help us financially. There's a history of the Warehouse. There's a history of the building. There's all about the Alliance. We're also always looking for volunteers to help out at shows and to help out when we're doing other work around here when the shows aren't going. So there's lots of information there.
It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. And of course, we've been talking to a couple folks from the Warehouse in downtown La Crosse and thank them very much for their time. Here is an update. They've always got shows going on over at the Warehouse. And as Steve said, you can check out their website, which is whrocks.com. That's whrocks.com. A couple of upcoming shows. Saturday, tomorrow, Grim Rose is going to be at the Warehouse with Little SCVM and Stevie B. So you can check that out as well. And then Monday, there are several bands. The headliner there, Claim Defeat, and Claim Defeat is playing along with Slugs, Knights, and Perth. That's coming up at 6 p.m. on Monday night at the Warehouse. And if you want to find out more about our program, there's two things I want to tell you. Number one, you can always find previous episodes of our show. You can stream all of our content on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. And another way to get in touch with us, and I'd love to hear from you directly. If you have questions about what's on the show, if you have an idea for an upcoming show, or if there's just something that you've been meaning to pass along to us at WPR and just haven't found the time or the means to do it, I'd love to hear from you. The email address for our show, it goes directly to me and a couple of other staff members here, is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. You'd be very welcome to get in touch with us anytime. I'd love to hear from you. A couple of people helped produce this show. Dawn Jewell is one of our producers, along with Kate Spranger. Thank them both very much for their efforts. And I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.